So, Andy, let's talk swag.
All right, just jumping right into it.
Yeah.
Let's do it. What are you thinking? I've got a lot of questions about this. So first, like for the team, for customers, for special things, like what is the purpose of it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think primarily it's for the team. We did swag in the form of t-shirts and hoodies before, just with a pretty simple like slogan or whatever. And now like we're going to be doing like a rebranding project and all this, and want to put like the new logo on some swag for the team, but also probably for like high value customers or customers that opt into something or something rather. I don't know. And so I think those are two potentially different things. But for the team, a big part of it, and this is like some backstory, is like we would have done like a team retreat this summer or like early fall, and made the decision now with like the Delta variant COVID, I think it was a good decision to not do an in-person retreat. And so we're doing a remote retreat, which like we can talk more about as we get closer. It'll be a few months from now. But part of that is like want to send some really nice swag ahead of the retreat, you know, shirts and hoodies and water bottles and food and stuff like that. So just trying to get some of that stuff in place now, because like some of it takes some time. You know, we have a team member in, you know, Chile and Nigeria and, you know, Ukraine, and like, so all like sending some of this stuff, I think could be quite difficult. So trying to get a sense for how to source that stuff. We've used Printful before, and it's great because it just, you can send directly from them to wherever. But yeah, just kind of don't know where to start. Like want to send really, really, really nice stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was one thing that, I forget where he said it, but I remember Heaton Shaw saying the difference in cost between a shitty shirt and an actually comfortable shirt is not that much. Just get the nice shirt. And I took that to heart. And I feel like we've, for all the swag we've done, we've always made it higher quality because you want it to be something that people actually wear. And if spending $5 extra a shirt gets you that, where it's like a shirt they love, that is more than worth it. Not even for marketing purposes, just for your team. Like you want them to associate your stuff with high quality things. You want them to be proud of it. You want them to want to wear it. That sort of thing. I have not really done any or minimal international shipping. So like what we do with our swag, our team gets swag, but we have something called the Winner's Circle, where if you use our logo as your avatar on DraftKings or FanDuel or Yahoo and come in top 5 of a contest with a certain size prize pool, we'll send you swag and post your screenshot on our site. So we spend like definitely 5 figures a year on swag, but it's more for the customers. Our market just naturally is like US and Canada. I had one package I shipped to London and it got returned to me like 2 months later. So I'm not exactly the person to ask on the effective ways of shipping internationally. That would honestly be my biggest concern by far, because I don't know how standard it will be. I think they might give you a range for shipping to Chile takes between 3 and 8 weeks. And I wouldn't be surprised if sometimes it takes longer. And that would just be, and sometimes things get held up in customs. Sometimes things are like, with all the countries that you're shipping to, I would expect things to get returned to you. Unless Printful does international. Do you know if they do?
They do, yeah.
Okay. Do they have, they have a sales team. I would honestly just talk to them. But what kind of things are you thinking about for the swag?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, you go to some of these like swag box stores, you know, and they have some really amazing stuff that like I never would have thought of, you know, like socks and USB drives, obviously, but like bags and shirts and hoodies and stuff like that. Like I think whether it's for the team or for customers, like I think for customers, a t-shirt is a smart thing, but for the team, like a notebook and a water bottle and like a really nice hoodie. Like I got a hoodie from Tiny Seed that is just like so amazingly good and comfortable. I wear it all the time, you know, like in the winter, it's just like that and a t-shirt. And that's just like, it's my uniform. So yeah, like you're saying, I want to get something that I like that's ours and like I wear all the time.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest thing is, I think including high quality die cut stickers of the logo of the brand are good. But it's like, other than that, I try not to include knickknacks, because if you just think about conferences, if you think about just places where you get swag, those are the things that just get left behind, get thrown away.
Yeah.
And that's just a waste. And it's just like not what you want your team to actually appreciate the things and think about using it. So for our customer swag box, what we do is it's also, you can see, I'll unblur this. You can see like on the, I'll try to, in the back corner of my wall, I have like, everyone's listening to this. Well, this isn't great radio, but we have like a well-designed box that has Saber Sim on the front. When you open it up, it is designed in there. It has different social media things, sells like people like share their swag on social. We then fill it with crinkle cut green paper to match the branding. And then we put in a water bottle, like a Camelback, like everything that we put in is name brand or at least like high quality. So it's like Camelback, water bottle, Anchor, power block, battery charger thing. Then a couple stickers, obviously, some koozies. And then the shirt is like a very comfortable shirt. I forget the name of the brand. It's not like a Nike or thing like that, but it's like just a well-made shirt. And same with the hoodie. It's one that people, when we give it to them, they're like, this is the best hoodie I've ever had. And I think that's the biggest lesson is just get really high quality stuff so that, like you were saying with the Tiny Seed one, like that's the go-to thing with or without your brand. Like that's the go-to thing people want to wear. And I think the boxes, I guess if you're not doing a retreat, like retreats are expensive. So if you've kind of anchored yourself on the cost of a retreat, maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to. So for the box, what we did is probably spent like $500 to get it designed on 99 Designs. And then there's Printful might print boxes, but we use Packlane, and each box probably costs, depending on how big of the quantity is, like maybe $10 to get printed. I mean, you don't need massive quantities through them. And you could probably just do like 25 or 50. And like, I don't think it'd be a bad idea to have some of those on hand to send to partners or to send to other people. And that's kind of what I would try to do is like, the smaller the quantity you get, obviously the more expensive things are. So it's like, think about ways where you could give out 25 of these or 50 of these, like maybe include things for your employees' partners. Maybe if they have kids, like thinking about that, it's just like finding ways to get as many people involved. But yeah, I mean, the hedonism of just like getting the good quality stuff is like the most important part of this, because swag, that's just like this scratchy t-shirt where the image fades after a month.
Yeah, it shrinks all weird and boxy and stuff. Yeah.
You don't want to have just like your swag just be shit that's like taking up room in someone's house. You want it to be where they're waiting to throw it out or donate it or whatever. It's like you want it to be something where that's the piece of clothing, the water bottle, whatever that they want to use by default.
Do you have all of the boxes like sent to you and they're sitting in your house or?
They were.
Okay.
Like they were in the closet behind me. We have Ross, who does support for us. He has all the swag. And so he's got some extra space in his office. And so he's got the swag. He handles the shipping of it and like coordinating with customers when they. So basically, like for the winner's circle, you tweet out the screenshot of your finish position and tag us. And then Ross will follow up with them, get their information. They get a free month of Saber Sim. And then we get their address and stuff so we can ship them the swag. So yeah, he handles all that. But yeah, before for 2 years or a year and a half or whatever, probably longer. Yeah, 2 years. It was just all in my apartment. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think we could do 50 pretty easily. I mean, we're 15 or 16. And then another like handful of integration partners and then another handful of people in the space. Or and like then the some high value
customers that have maybe some of the all the private podcasting points of contact that you have, and maybe also just like anyone with a really big podcast or people that mention you, that kind of thing. I would look at it as a way to start more conversations with them as well. It's like first priority is obviously getting things to your team that they're proud of, but I would see what you could do to get more out of it than that, than just that, and looking at like, all right, like, we're doing this order. Let's just like send out a bunch of things to key accounts, to potential accounts, to whatever else. That's how I would look at it, is trying to be a little bit more strategic about it.
Mm. Yeah. And if you think about like, I was looking at one of the places that does like a pre-made box and it was like $75 a box, I think. and they have a minimum order of 50. And yeah, so that's not...
So we've actually looked at some of the fulfillment ones so that Ross doesn't have to do it. The trouble that we run into is that the boxes have to be the same. And depending on how... If you've won... The minimum is winning over $1,000. Then there's another tier if you won over 10,000, then over 100,000, and then a million. And obviously, the most common is a $1,000 box. And we could easily, like, I would have no issues pre-ordering 50 to 100 of those. But then we don't need that many of the higher tiers. And so it would be like they fulfill those ones, but then Ross fulfills others. And it's like they're frequent enough where it would still take a good amount of time. So you might as well just do all of it. But yeah, if you can just order one box from one place and have them do all of it, it is definitely worth the time for your situation. Like, I would not have someone on your team, let alone you, like, packing it and all of that. Like,
yeah,
just find a company and pay a slight premium. But like you said, it's really not that bad at all.
Right. Yeah. The only thing I'm wondering about is, like, you know, there's in this. Okay. So I'm looking at Swag Up, and this is really in the weeds, but like,
that was the one that we had looked at.
Okay. Yeah. So they have like a pack that has a shirt, a journal, a pen, stickers, a hoodie, and a tote, like a canvas bag. And so the thing I'm wondering is, like, with this minimum order of 50, do we have to say, like, okay, we're going to get 15 mediums and 20
larges? I never got that deep into it.
You know, like...
But, like, they were literally the ones that we were looking at, and their prices were maybe, like, a dollar or two higher on some things, but... It was all right in the range of what I'd be paying if I bought each of those things separately from a different vendor and they just had all of it. I would just talk to their salespeople and ask those details. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think it's going to be sizing stuff. It's like I have more sympathy for the e-commerce people who sell like clothing items now, just trying to manage it on a very small scale. It's like, oh yeah, like it doesn't follow a normal distribution. You can assume it does of like, size is where most people are larges, but internationally is going to change it. For us, like in our market, it does not follow, like large is not the most common. It's like extra large and then large and then probably 2XL and then medium and like 3XL are tied. And so it's like figuring out that is a pain in the ass. So I would definitely ask them how to do that, like how they handle it, because you don't want to have to buy 50 of each size. Like that would change it very dramatically.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I think they'd probably be okay with it otherwise.
Yeah. No, I mean, I spent maybe 30 minutes looking around before we hopped on here. And yeah, I mean, they seem to have a good setup. So, well, I'll report back in another week or two and let everyone know kind of what happened. It's cool. Like we definitely have some partners and some, you know, friends in the industry, even that are kind of, you know, competitors, but are just super, super people and friendly and just want to send them some stuff. And yeah, be cool to see it walking around and, you know, post it on social media and stuff like that would be pretty cool.
Yeah. And the only downside, I think, of using like a Swag Up is that you're not going to be able to sample it yourself first. I mean, maybe they'll send you for a bigger order. Maybe they'll send you like a sample of things, but that's always been one of my favorite is so for the 100K tier, we send the custom backpack. And that's one where it's like every time we run out, I'll order a different one and just like keep one for myself to like test it out, see if you like it. So you won't have that extra perk, but that's okay.
That's all right. Yeah.
So you talked a little bit about partners. I know you currently have some integrations. I know there are not necessarily integration partners as well, but like there are affiliates for you guys. There are just good co-promoters, whatever you want to call it. Is that something you're looking into going like more down that road of focusing on that channel?
Yeah, I think that partnerships and like for me, partnerships can be a lot of things, right? It can be like a product integration. It can be a marketing, you know, co-promotion kind of thing, which we've done. We've done integrations. We've done marketing co-promotion things with other kind of tangential products. We have affiliates and then even like customers. You know, I think customers are like the most natural partner to recommend our stuff to other people. I think again, like abstract away this, not just a Castos thing or a SaberSim thing, but like talk maybe about like how we have done it or how we've seen other people do it with us in the past might be like most helpful. And I'll say I'll start, I guess, from our perspective, like our most successful integration and like the one that was the most well done was with Elementor, the page builder for Word. Part of it, like, I think that the things that we felt like we needed to nail was like the product part, obviously, really like us delivering what our customers need when they use that tool, you know? And so that's like the obvious one, but is important. And then like coordinating the product release part of that with the marketing and that all being really clearly understood and really equitable between both parties. This was when Denise was still doing marketing for us, and she was really upfront. And like Elementor as a company is a very, I think, good marketing company. And so they've done a bunch of these, and they were really well-versed in like, okay, we're going to send an email. We're going to do a blog post. We're going to do a YouTube video. We'll come on your podcast, and we expect you all to do the same things. Dedicated email that it goes out to all users, integration page in the app. I feel like we did pretty well with that one. We've done others, and we've done about the same thing from a like marketing coordination and then even like product perspective, and they haven't had the impact that that one has had. And I guess that's really like when I mentioned this as a topic for today, that's what I'm kind of wondering is like some integrations go crazy, you know, and they have a really positive impact and some don't. And like, I don't know why that is. And I haven't found, like, we haven't done enough of them for me to find that pattern. But like, if this is something we're going to do more of, or folks out there listening are going to do more of, like, what things can we do to maximize the chance of really what ends up being a pretty significant amount of effort across several parts of the company to really be worth it.
Do you know what the other, for the ones that didn't go as well, do you know how much they did on their end, like promoting to their audience?
Yeah, I mean, we've generally followed about the same playbook, you know? It's
and like they executed their part of it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, because I think that's my first guess is like when things don't go well, it's that there isn't much promotion on the other side. And yeah, it doesn't seem like that's the case. I mean, I don't want you to like name names of things that didn't go well, but like just looking at, in my head, when I think about the types of companies that would be good fits, I mean, it seems like a membership plugin, one of those types of sites, makes perfect sense for private podcasting. Whereas to me, like Elementor seems so generic that it surprises me is that effective. I guess like they just have a really, really big audience. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so this is a good point. I put an integration into two buckets, into one of two buckets. One, it gives your existing customers more value because it lets you let them use your tool with this other thing in a better way. And the other one is it brings new customers in because it offers functionality between two apps that doesn't exist otherwise. And for me, Elementor mostly was the former, right? Was like you could have used Sirius Simple Podcasting with Elementor before, but what we did is built like Elementor widgets and pre-made page templates and all this stuff to where literally just like click, 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 and you have a whole website that is built in Elementor. And so that I think just like removed this enormous pain, you know, from customers that were already going to use Elementor, but realized that they could click three buttons and have a website for their podcast. Whereas Memberspace, one of the other integrations we've done is more like, we probably just get new customers because of that integration. And Memberspace is a very successful company, but the degree of size difference between them and Elementor is, you know, hundreds of times probably. Yeah. And not that Memberspace has not been a successful integration for us. It's brought us some really, really, really high value customers and they're great to work with. But yeah, I guess just like saying, maybe even strategically, as you look at like what kinds of things to integrate with, like how do you decide this one versus that? Like for you guys, I know you've done a lot of different types of integrations, even like white labeling and things like that. But like how do you guys decide, yes, this is a good move for us, or no, this is probably just a waste of our time. It doesn't provide a lot of value.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly something we've struggled with. When we had our first like real partner, it's what we call gray labeling, where these are membership sites where they give much more detailed and hands-on advice for DFS, Data Fantasy Sports, where it's like they will every day they'll have their podcasts out. They'll have their cheat sheets where they talk about who the best plays are, this and that, and analyze the games. They provide more commentary. We don't provide any commentary really, but like, they provide a lot of that. And so they're not really competitive with us because that's not what we're doing. And so what we've done is pretty much embed our tools into their site so that when they log in, when their subscriber logs into their site, if they have the right package, it'll log them in to SaberSim right on their site. And we first did this really like during COVID. We've had requests for this for as long as I can remember and always said, no, we don't have the bandwidth for it. We don't have the bandwidth for it. And it wasn't a lie, like we didn't. Then we had more bandwidth when the major live sports were down. And the first partner, we structured in a way where it was going to be worthwhile for us. Like there was a guaranteed minimum that they would be referring us each month. They paid a significant deposit to cover development. They had a development team on their side as well, who was easy to work with. So we knew there weren't going to be, we knew it was never going to be like a smooth process. There's always going to be little things that pop up, but we felt they had the technical expertise. We had the bandwidth. We had a guarantee that would make it worthwhile. So we went down that road. Once we built it out, it was easier to add it to other sites. And so other sites had reached out when they saw this first partner. And honestly, like we sort of dropped the ball on what would happen after that. I think they had varying degrees of success.
You mean they, like their customers appreciated that integration, like with different, to a different degree, or what do you mean?
They kind of. I mean, so it wasn't something that was free for their customers. Like it was a paid add-on that they basically had to pay to subscribe to SaberSim because we didn't want to cannibalize our own sales through partners. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think they appreciated it. But the hard part was our tools do work differently than the standard DFS tools. Like the way every other tool has been built for the past 5-6 years works one way. Ours is similar, but it's different enough that it confuses a lot of people. And we didn't do a good enough job of training our partners on how to sell it. We didn't really do much in just like going on podcasts, their podcasts and explaining it. And that was sort of the thing where it's like the partners that got it did much better because they could sell it to their customers. They could explain it and help their customers. Mm-hmm. Whereas the ones that didn't, it did fine, but it wasn't really worth the headaches. And so we hit pause on partnerships for a while, let these ones run, and we still supported them and all of that. But it wasn't until we hired Jordan a few months back that we've had the bandwidth to be like, all right, like let's start doing demos for their customers. Let's start helping them sell us. And I think, yeah, I would love if we could just like train them on how to do it, but it's almost easier for us to just do it ourselves, have them co-host it, do a deep dive on us. Like for one of our partners, we did a deep dive on baseball. We had their pro there, who their customers know, asking questions, adding his commentary, this and that. And then we would kind of show, all right, like when you get this advice from this person, here's how to go into SaberSim and turn that into your lineups. And here are the other adjustments you can make and this and that. And I think like that's the direction we need to go going forward. We're in the process of onboarding another partner, and there's probably another one coming on. And it's like we're still figuring out the playbook there. But yeah, I just think in general, to make it work, it has to be very hands-on, or the other end of the equation where it's like it's a pure integration. It checks a box. It goes and they list it on their site. You list it on yours. So when people are evaluating the products, or they're already in that product and they want to start a podcast, like, oh, this one connects with it. Like, I'll just use this. Like, I think those can still be very profitable, but you just can't get like it mixed up on how much work you want to spend on that. Because like if it's truly just like you have a dev just churning through these integrations, and you do have someone just like making sure it's going to get listed, making sure like maybe something comes out, some blog post announces there's something, like I think that can be worthwhile. But where you can get into trouble is when you confuse the two and spend a ton of time on something that just won't go anywhere. And for us, it was like, we spent a ton of time onboarding everyone and then nowhere near enough time to actually make them successful.
Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly, yeah. Because like, and that, like, I'm glad we're talking through this. That's my experience, is that like integrations tie more to success than anything. They're definitely your ones. And like for us, Zapier is the one of like, you have to integrate with Zapier, and we integrate with Zapier. And that's like, that opens a bunch of doors and lets people check the box of, okay, I can connect my whatever thing to this. And that's great. Where I think like we see the examples of really successful customers, you know, are ones that take the time to understand the integration and the kind of business impact it has, to whether they understand it when they come in or they talk to us enough to understand it, and we can relay that, to the point where like we've started doing some success story content pieces around like successful integration customers. And I think that is something we'll add to our playbook going forward, is like, okay, here's kind of the launch packet of co-promotion. And then we're going to pick a customer, you know, 30 days out who has, you know, successfully integrated with us. And we know them because we've been chatting to them and, you know, to get them onboarded and stuff like that. And then we'll put out a, you know, kind of an interview of how they use this tool and how it makes their life better and stuff like that. We just integrated with Descript and they did that. And it was the first time I've heard of that being like a launch piece, you know, of like a success story at launch. But I think it's just because so many freaking people use that tool that like they had a bunch of people using it already. So yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah. All I would ask is just like, this is a new, you're still figuring out the playbook here, which is fine, but figuring out playbooks takes a lot of time and resources. And I think it's one thing if you're working with an agency on paid ads, obviously it still takes oversight to make it successful, but you can have someone else really running with it and then have, did I get that name right? All right. You can have Sam managing and overseeing and providing feedback, but he's not really driving the boat. But with this one, this is something you're going to want to own internally, those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And saying yes to this is saying no to other things. So it's like my thought with marketing is always, when you have things that work, keep doubling down on them until you get diminishing returns. And I do feel like you're doing that, especially with SEO. But it's like, is this the bet you want to place on new channels to test? Because I think you have to place bets to grow beyond, to grow faster than you're growing now. But with the scale you're at, I don't know how many you can place. And like this one to me just seems like it would take more bandwidth than other bets may. And so that'll just, and I don't know the answer. Like genuinely, like I'm just trying to think about it, where that would be top of mind for me is like, all right, like if all we're doing new is figuring out this partnership playbook for the next quarter or maybe longer, like, cause it takes a while to get these in place, especially when you have other, when it's not just like, hey, we want to integrate with you. It's more like, we want to co-promote this, we want to do this, that, like it takes time to negotiate, it takes time to build it. Then you got to schedule the launch. Like a quarter might not even be enough. So it's like, if this is really what marketing is working on for two quarters, is that okay?
Yeah. And I mean, where we are is like, this is not the quarter for it for sure. And doing this kind of thing in the fourth quarter, if it's the beginning of the fourth quarter, it's okay. If it's the end, then it's just going to fall on deaf. And so like where my time and focus is right now is not on this, but it's something I'm starting to just think about. You know, like I tell the team, like, okay, this is the thing, you know, we're working on, like, this is the thing. And for me, the thing this quarter is getting the sales folks hired and getting the support around them so they can be successful. And that's it. But there's like 10% of my time I can't do that because I just am like burned out on it and to do something else. And so I kind of sit and think about the next thing. And this is that next thing for me, because for me, the goal is like by the end of September to say, okay, the sales folks are onboarded. We have pipeline for them. They have a repeatable and scalable way to grow their pipeline and close more deals. If that can happen by the end of September, that's great. If it can't, then I'll spend more time on it. But at least I want them to be like building momentum there. And then, yeah, I mean, I do see this like partnerships. And again, like it's not just product partnerships. It can be marketing partnerships and bigger affiliates and all that kind of stuff as a pretty high leverage thing for me to do.
What are Sam's thoughts? Because he's the head of growth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So he has done, again, like there's a lot of flavors of this. He has done a couple of the flavors of this in the past, more on the marketing and like non-product partnership side of things. And he is really keen to do some of this in the future. And I think that he could run the non-product partnership side of things, or even the product integration outside of the product, you know, like the product stuff I still need to work with Brian on. But Sam is very, like, he ran the whole integration kind of plan and execution with Descript, and it went really well. So like, he's very capable of, you know, like a senior level kind of just owning and managing that.
But would he say that is the next, like, does he agree with your prioritization of that as the next bet?
Yeah. And it's non-binary. It's just that's not now, you know, like the sales stuff is the focus now. We'll probably carry over into the fourth quarter. And then looking at again, like all those kinds of partnerships, affiliates, co-promotion of like adjacent tools, product integrations. Yeah. I think maybe those are the big three. And customers, customers as partners.
Broadly speaking, does the average lead that comes from an integration partner, are they leads that a salesperson should be talking to?
Sometimes very much, yeah.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Especially on the private podcasting side. I mean, we have customers paying us, you know, hundreds and thousands of dollars. Not hundreds of thousands, but hundreds and sometimes thousands of dollars a month. And so, yeah, they deserve a salesperson, and then they deserve, you know, an account manager.
But I would guess like an Elementor referral is going to be very different than a Memberspace referral.
Yep. Totally. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think you're on the right track, especially when you said like, it's not a binary thing and there are different flavors of this. And it's, yeah, I would just narrow down a bit more on what are the highest value, what are the ones that are the best bets, not in terms of immediate payoff, but just in terms of all the factors of what can prove this out fastest for us, what can have the highest, like what is the most valuable thing, like what are the ones where, and it's probably like honestly avoiding the ones where it's just setting up the integration and then knowing that you'll get a steady trickle of customers for a while, and more finding ones where there's an audience that you can tap into and more reliably or quickly get demand from that. That's all I would say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other kind of non-intangible, the other kind of consideration there is, yeah, I mean, we on our roadmap at some point is integrating with a tool like MailChimp. The chances of MailChimp doing a real strong content partnership with us is pretty low. And so, you know, maybe we'll put that in that category you mentioned of like, check the box, put it on the integrations page. We'll do a blog post about it and tweet at them or something, but don't plan on kind of running the whole playbook like we could with Memberspace, who, you know, I know the founders there, and we can kind of really partner more so on things.
How does it go back to, because you talked about the knowing what the customers need, what actually adds value to them. Are there features people are asking for that, like I'm sure people ask for, like email marketing software? It's like, oh, we're not going to build that, but we could find ways to do this. Like, are there things that jump out of, okay, like these are itches that we could scratch more readily for the customers?
So the big one is we have an integration with a tool called AdBarker, which does like dynamic ad management. And that's been a big one that like we can say, yep, we do that via this integration. Yeah, I mean, email marketing, social media campaigning, all that kind of stuff. We just say, hey, like we don't integrate with Hootsuite or whatever, but like that you go just use that tool, you know, for email, go use ConvertKit or whatever. Yeah. And I mean, some of the, I think kind of what you're getting at is like some of the other integrations that might make sense are integrating with like Squadcast, like we're using, you know, like what if when we finish this, we just push a button and it pushes this episode live on Castos. And that's kind of what we did with Descript, right? It's like you go in Descript and you edit. Descript is amazing. Like you edit the text and it edits the audio that corresponds with that text. Yeah. And so you just do that and then you hit a button and it publishes it to Castos for you. So like it makes the production of your show, if you want to kind of do it yourself, like super, super easy. So
I feel like obviously marketing to their audience is going to be helpful because they go, oh, I'm already using this tool. This makes it easier for me. Just like it builds out my stack in much more like all in one way. But if they're already on Squadcast, if they're already using Descript, they're probably already hosting their podcast somewhere else. Maybe that's enough to get them to switch, but that's like that's a lot of inertia to overcome. But I think it's almost more valuable for the partners, like for the Squadcasts and the Descripts, because your customers very likely aren't using those. Some, many are, but like they might not be. And they're already on your hosting platform. And so if they're not using one of those things and you put out a video saying, here's my podcast recording process, starts on Squadcast, goes to the Descript, goes into Castos, and like all because of the integrations with Castos, then it's like your customers' light bulbs will go off. They'll want to sign up for those. But also people who are like new to podcasting can stumble on that video on YouTube through search, wherever else, and be like, oh, I wasn't sure how to get started with podcasting. This looks perfect because I can just tie it all together and like, oh, they even have a video showing how to use Elementor to build like a really nice looking website pretty easily. I almost feel like it's more just pure marketing for you, where you can just really show, here is the full soup to nuts process of podcasting that is made possible because Castos is the hub that ties it all together. But like, I would be looking at getting affiliate relationships with Squadcast, with Descript, with those other tools, because you're like, again, if they're for Elementor, it's different because people, it's such a big audience and people on there will be looking to start a podcast. But with the other ones, they already have a podcast. You would need to give them like a big discount or some other thing to really incentivize them to switch. So I think that's harder to go towards you. And it's much easier to push to them. But
you
it
guys,
also
do you guys make like a decent affiliate commission just in general?
We honestly, I think that's another short sight on our part, is not doing a ton with it. We have what I just call like a downsell funnel right now, where when you sign up for a trial, it's a two-step process. First, you create your account. Then on the next screen, you put in your credit card and select your plan. If you complete the first step without completing the second step, we'll follow up and like try to re-emphasize the value and try to get them to come back, put in their credit card. I think we do like two emails trying to get them to come back. If they don't, we then do the downsell to an affiliate partner where we say sign up for in deposit on Monkey Knife Fight, which is like a light version of a DraftKings or a FanDuel, where it's just more straightforward, the games that they have. Sign up and deposit on one of these sites, forward me the deposit email, and they'll give you a free month of SaberSim. That is like literally the only place we mention it. And that usually makes us like $1,000 a month, which is not much in like the scheme of things, but it shows me that there's something there. And I think we can do better with that by just actually like thinking more about how it fits in what we're doing. Because right now it's like a kind of random offer. We don't have tools to help them play on Monkey Knife Fight. But if they're interested in DFS, they're probably interested in that. So it's a bit of a stretch, but I think we could build out tools that better fit into that. I think there are other partners we could look at. I think SaaS companies especially could learn a lot more from the internet marketing world of trying to get, not just trying to get every dollar that they can, but thinking about the synergistic ways to bring in other ways, streams of revenue. Because like you integrating with Squadcast, you integrating with Descript, like that adds value to your customers. It's not a random money grab. It's nothing like, I think it makes sense that you would get compensated in some way for that. And it's much easier, like is a pretty big understatement, but it's way easier, significantly easier, exponentially easier to partner with someone who's already doing this and for you to try to build those tools yourself. That's pretty much a non-starter, but you know, this will help your customers. You know, this will help their customers. You know, this will help new podcasters. And so to me, it's like, I would try to find ways to at least capture some of that just as gravy. You want to do it because it's going to help people with retention. It will help with conversions when they see all the things that they can do with effectively the platform you're building out, even if it's not all internal. And yeah, you should capture some of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we thought about it even like we're not an Amazon affiliate and we have a dozen probably like hardware kind of product blog posts recommending, you know, best mic for this and best mic for that. And I know there are several sites in our world that are enormous Amazon affiliates just for, you know, microphones and gear and stuff like that. I mean, we could probably make an extra 10 grand a year just by adding those links on the site. And it doesn't take anything away from our customers.
Yeah. Experience. And I think there's a balance to it because you don't want to get distracted by an extra 10 grand a year. And so, because in schemes like that literally is a rounding error. That does not matter. That won't change your business. You've raised money. I think as a bootstrap company, it makes more sense to care about these things because that can cover the servers for the year. That can make it so like if it's a few thousand dollars a month, like that can hire a part-time employee like it, from that perspective. But you don't want to get distracted like by picking up pennies when there's dollar bills around the corner. But at the same time, I think it's thinking bigger than that of like, all right, I mean, there are podcast affiliate sites that are making a million plus a year. So there's more ways than just that. But like, yeah, I think having someone on the team put some thought into it is like a way to double down on what's already working because you already have the traffic. And so this is more of an optimization. You're not figuring out a playbook from scratch. It's not having someone full-time split testing where to put links and calls to action, this and that. It's like, put up something. If it turns into a few thousand dollars, like 5,000 a month, then maybe put some more effort into it. But if not, like it's something that someone could set up on your team in a day, and that's probably worth it. But it's more strategically thinking about the partners where affiliate revenues for software are typically recurring. So it could build into a bigger stream, especially when you are really the linchpin in a platform that will help with retention. Not that you guys suffer from like significant churn, but people who are using Squadcast, Descript, and Castos are going to be less likely to churn. So like that is an income stream that could add up to hundreds of thousands a year. And like maybe that's worth it. Again, it's like that's just where my brain goes, but I know your aspirations are millions and millions a year. So it's like you don't necessarily want to get too distracted by it. But I just wouldn't leave the money on the table either. Cause I don't think it's like that big of a thing to just if you're already doing the partnership stuff or will be. Getting an affiliate link literally is like, that's not much extra work.
Yeah. I mean, just as an aside that like we were talking before we started recording about like stress and pressure and stuff. And like this constant, like, is this the most valuable thing I can be doing with my time is really tiring. I think it's like the best word. Like, sometimes I don't want to do the highest value thing. I just want to, you know, putz around and evaluate this tool or that tool. And this is just a random aside, but like, that is something that I think about quite a bit. It's like, I think I gravitate pretty naturally to like high value things with my time, but just sometimes it's exhausting, you know, and I just want to do what I want to do. Anyways, just an aside / me bitching.
No, and I think that's true. But I also think you can go a little deeper where value, I think it matters how you're defining value. Because one project may have a return that's an order of magnitude or multiple orders of magnitude higher than another, but it's going to take 30-hour a week focus from you for months to get done versus another might not have a significant payoff, but it takes a day of your time and it's pretty certain that like it's at least not going to hurt. And so it's thinking about the payoff, it's thinking about the effort. And it's also thinking about the certainty of the outcome. But yeah, doing that calculus constantly is draining. And I think just giving yourself permission, just like, who gives a shit? If this is like the optimal use of my time for this minute, like I just need a fucking break.
Yeah.
I think that's fine yeah. as well. Yeah. And honestly, yeah. that's what a lot of times where it's like, oh yeah, like these little things like, oh, like, yeah, we don't do affiliate stuff. I know people do a lot of it. Let me just like truly spend an afternoon, write some emails, add these to a sequence and move on. Like, oh. Okay, like that's not nothing. I mean, if I don't count that in our revenue for like planning for hiring and things like that, but it's done enough. I'm like, okay, I bet there might be something more there. Next time when I get a little bored, we'll try another thing. And it's like, mm-hmm. it's like kind mm-hmm. of my like side fun project that I think could turn into something more, but it hasn't yet warranted the add this to a sprint for Andy to really dig
yeah, into. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
What, for you, I know we want to start wrapping up, but I guess for you, when you do need to give yourself a break, obviously there's like leaving work behind, going outside, playing with the kids, that kind of thing. But are there tasks in work that for you aren't necessarily recharging, but they're not draining? Like, are there things you like thinking about that?
Yeah. Like my guilty pleasure is like our product and development process. You know, like when I don't feel like doing sales and marketing, which is basically all I'm doing these days. I love just thinking about like, how do we take feedback from the customer and the industry and it shapes our product? Now, it has a whole big old huge thing with a lot of tools and a lot of process and a lot of communication. All of it has to be circular and constant. And so, yeah, it's just something that we'll never master. But how about you?
Where I get into trouble is I like thinking strategy. I like thinking about marketing stuff. I like, but not super deep in the weeds, just more big picture of all right, like where do we want to go? And then actually getting down to it a bit of getting into strategies for doing it. But that's where it gets tough is that I'll have come up with, to recharge, I'll come up with more ideas. And then I go, shit, like I'm already like overwhelmed with what
is on my plate
right now. And so it's like, I need to stop doing that, but then I'll feel burnt out. And yeah, it just can be a vicious cycle. But I feel like we're getting a good handle on the focus, just sort of accepting, all right, like I can't do all these things. Pick one, move forward on it. And we're making good progress now. But yeah.
Awesome.
A meandering chat, a fun one for me to kind of pick your brain a little bit. Hopefully people found it interesting. But if anyone has any feedback, any suggestions, any ideas, always happy to hear it. And you can email us at podcast@seekingscale.com. And thanks everyone for tuning in.
Bye everyone.
See everybody.